Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Nonprofits play a crucial role in communities. From public health to education, they support charitable services and advocate for social change. They also face a lot of external challenges, from a lack of staffing to a lack of funding. Those challenges have increased with the current administration in Washington, which has been making cuts to federal funding in a number of areas, including nonprofits. Joining us now to look at the overall state of nonprofits in the U.S. is Sarah Sedian, Senior Vice President of Public Policy and Campaigns at the National Association of Nonprofits. Welcome to All Sides, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
If you could sum up the current state of nonprofits nationwide, how would you describe it right now?
This is a really difficult moment for nonprofits across the country. They are still committed to doing their essential work of providing much needed services to members of their community, but they're facing really new struggles, struggles that are more serious in scope and severity than in recent memory. And that's making it very difficult for them to keep their eye on their missions and to continue to do their work.
And I'm guessing, how long have you been with your organization? I'm not sure how long you've been there.
I've actually been here 4 months. I'm a brand new baby here at NCN.
So I'm guessing when you interviewed for the job or started thinking about taking the job, things looked different than they do now, especially if you're so new in the job. I mean, how have you adapted to all of the change in the past few months?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. The organization has had to do things in a new way to respond to the new threats that we're seeing. I can give you one example. Just within weeks of our new CEO coming on board in January, in 1 week after the Trump administration was inaugurated, the administration moved to freeze all federal assistance funds within a very short window of time. So they put out their memo at 8 o'clock at night, and we had to move into action. By the next afternoon, we had filed our first piece of litigation against the administration to free up those funds. And thankfully, we've been able to achieve a nationwide preliminary injunction to prevent the administration from going about that funding freeze. But that was new for our organization. We had never been a party to a lawsuit against the administration in the past. But the threats are so much greater. And so it required us to change the way that we've been approaching our work.
Did you basically, because your organization is called the National Council of Nonprofits, so you basically you filed a lawsuit on behalf, of all nonprofits in the entire United States? That's such a big thing. Is that what it was?
Yeah, in a way. Well, we have 32,000 organizational members that are part of our state and regional associations of nonprofits. But when we brought the lawsuit, we wanted to help protect the 1.5 million charitable nonprofits that do excellent work in the United States. And so we brought this litigation to try to help protect them.
And was it funding that was already promised that was being rescinded, or was it funding that they expected to have coming or the ability to access the funding? Like, what exactly was the lawsuit?
Yeah, all of the above. Mm-hmm. What we saw was a wholesale attempt by the administration to stop all federal assistance funds from going out the door to reaching nonprofits so that they can serve their communities. And thankfully, because of enormous political pressure and because of the litigation we brought, within 48 hours, the administration was forced to take back that directive to federal agencies so that funding could continue to flow. But what we've seen since then is more and more attempts by the administration to cancel contracts with nonprofits, to terminate funding, to withhold funding. There's this across the board effort to really deny nonprofits the resources that they need to serve their communities. And it's having a direct impact on the local organizations in Ohio and elsewhere who are providing essential services to people while they're in crisis and who are helping to meet the everyday needs of the American people.
Do you feel like this is just a part of the overall Trump administration idea of cutting down on everything in the federal government? Or do you feel like nonprofits got more hit harder, got a bulk of the funding cuts compared to other departments?
I think it's clear that the administration is very, very clearly targeting nonprofit organizations. And you can see that in a lot of the language that they use to describe their actions. They are using this very harmful rhetoric that frames nonprofits as being enemies of the American way of life and enemies to be fought, when that couldn't be further from the truth. Nonprofits are really are not our neighbors coming together to serve local needs. They are providing essential services on the ground. And so when we see that sort of harmful rhetoric from the administration and from some in Congress, it's deeply concerning about what it means.
When you talk with the members of your organization who you're helping, who you filed the lawsuit on the behalf, do they ask you questions about the DEI work as well? Because there was a lot of effort throughout the country to remove diversity, equity, and inclusion from lots of different departments. So was there concern among the nonprofits that you work with that they need to remove the DEI letters from their website in order not to attract attention from the administration?
Yeah, that's an area where this administration is very clearly trying to create a sense of fear and confusion about what is allowed under the law. And they are, again, if you look between executive orders and federal actions from different agencies, it's very clear that they're trying to discourage nonprofits and others in the private sector from advancing racial equity and social equity through their work. And a lot of that's about creating fear about whether or not by doing that work, they would be opening themselves up to retribution from the administration. And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of nonprofits that are scared and that are backing away from that work. But it's incredibly important that they know what their rights are under the law and that they continue to move forward with their missions. This administration can't just identify policies that it disagrees with and weaponize the federal government to chill dissent. That's wrong, regardless of who's in power. And we need, in a healthy democracy, we need nonprofits to be able to be free to do their work, to identify the local problems that they want to help solve without political interference from any administration.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the state of nonprofits nationwide with Sarah Sedean, Senior Vice President of Public Policy and Campaigns at the National Association of Nonprofits. What have you heard from leaders of nonprofits? What are they saying to their boards and their staff? How do they address concerns about the futures of their organizations? I'm sure that leaders are worried.
Absolutely. I think they're looking at what Congress has done this year already and what we think might be coming down the pike that would impact nonprofits. And they are trying to figure out a way that they can keep serving their communities with fewer resources. I'll give you a great example. The tax bill that Congress recently passed, it has some bright spots in it, but overall it would reduce the amount of charitable donations that nonprofits receive, meaning that there's fewer dollars for them to put back into their communities to serve their neighbors. And at the same time, there are really significant cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, which means that there are more people in their community who are struggling to meet their healthcare needs and their food security needs. So nonprofits, even though they're at the front lines of serving their communities and responding to those needs, they have greater needs that they're facing, but fewer resources to do it. And some nonprofits are really struggling right now. They're thinking about cutting back on services, laying off staff, and in worst cases, even closing their doors forever if they can't get access to the resources that they need to do their really important work.
What do you say to those who say that perhaps nonprofits, some of them at least, have too much reliance on federal money? Like they only were able to function because they had these federal grants, and that the private sector should be filling those gaps, or they should be able to figure out how to get the funds without the federal funding.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I do hear that argument sometimes, but I think people are missing the critical, vital role that nonprofits play. These organizations are ones that are stepping in to fill gaps that are left by government and the private sector, right? Nonprofits are the ones who are filling that role of serving their communities precisely because government on its own and the private sector on its own are not serving those households. And so if we don't have nonprofits to play that role and to partner with government to provide services, those services wouldn't happen at all.
Now, I have to imagine, you know, you filed the lawsuit, you got some of the money back, or, you know, you stopped it from being pulled away, however you want to say it. But I have to imagine that the money is just not there in future budgets. If you take a look at, you know, President Trump's what they call the Big Beautiful Bill, is the money not there, not being allocated in the future?
With the tax bill, that means there are fewer resources for nonprofits, but we're also seeing it play out this way on the annual budget that Congress passes every year. And in fact, you and your listeners, I think, are really well positioned to understand just how devastating these cuts can be. When Congress last month passed a rescission package that clawed back more than $1 billion for local public radio, it not only means that the local organizations that are providing really important resources to their community, especially like emergency disaster response, those local organizations might not be there or might have to cut back on their ability to serve their community. But it points to a broader issue where we're seeing real debates in Congress right now about how to fund the federal government and how to fund nonprofits. And all of that is leading to tense negotiations in Congress where they have to reach a deal by October 1st to pass a budget, or we could risk a government shutdown. And ultimately, if the government were to shut down, it would mean that nonprofits wouldn't have the resources that they need to keep continuing to serve the people in their communities. And so you're seeing a real troubling dynamic here where it's very difficult for both parties to come together to reach an agreement about spending. And that's causing more stress, more chaos for nonprofits around the country.
Yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't mention myself, because we here at WOSU, we saw $2 million in federal funding rescinded, as you said, through the funding through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And obviously, as someone like me, who I've worked for a nonprofit public radio for almost 20 years, it is something that you worry about. Now, in the interim, member stations around the country have had lots of individual donors step up. We've seen lots of outpourings of support. The worry is that that's just one-time money, right? Or even if it is as a sustaining member and continuous money, can it fill the gap year after year after year so that we're here, you know, 20 years from now? Do you hear that from other nonprofits, that they have to look at meeting payroll next month, but then they also are trying to stay around for 20 years?
Absolutely. And it's usually the smallest organizations that might have the hardest time weathering the storm. So for the example of public radio, you know, we've heard that the rural stations, the stations that are in smaller communities who might not have the base of donations that larger nonprofits do, they might struggle the most and face the greatest impacts. But you're absolutely correct. We're talking about one-time use of funding and clawing back or rescinding funding for NPR and PBS one time. But the issue is so much broader. It really points to a breakdown in the bipartisan negotiations that are needed to pass spending bills every single year. And if we're talking about multiple years, many years where nonprofits don't have access to the resources they need, we're going to lose this critical infrastructure. And it's not easy to turn that back on. Once you lose those employees, once you lose that that organizational structure, it's very hard to bring it back online once money starts flowing again. So it's important that that we're talking to our members of Congress and urging them to stand up for nonprofits and to stand up for the funding that they rely on.
Before I let you go, I want to try to end on a positive note, right? Are you seeing an increase of support or at least awareness about the work being done by nonprofits? You know, because it was great. We had a membership drive after the rescission package, and we heard from so many people. And individual giving is an amazing way to support public media. But throughout the nation, are you hearing about support and more awareness? Tell me what you're hearing.
Absolutely. We have been so excited to see the energy around supporting nonprofits. And I can give you a great example. We recently launched our Nonprofits Get It Done media campaign, where we've been reminding the American people about the critical work that nonprofits do. And just this past weekend was National Nonprofit Day, and so many organizations from around the country participated. They shared stories about the great work that they're doing. And when the American people are reminded about the critical role that nonprofits play, they support them. And so I am really excited to see that positive message about how vital nonprofits are.
We've been speaking with Sarah Sedean, Senior Vice President of Public Policy and Campaigns with the National Association of Nonprofits. Thank you for being with us today, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
And coming up, our conversation about the state of nonprofits continues with a focus on Central Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. The scaling back, and in some cases, complete removal of federal and state funding, is making it a tough time for nonprofits. These organizations providing charitable support to some of the neediest residents in our community. And their budgets are being cut at a time when the need for services is increasing. We're now going to talk about the state of nonprofits here in Ohio, specifically Central Ohio. Joining us now is Michael Corey, Executive Director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County, and he recently authored an opinion column on the need to support nonprofits. Welcome to All Sides, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
So you wrote this opinion piece for Columbus Monthly addressing why now is the time to support nonprofits, and in the piece you said that 80% of your members say they cannot meet current demand for service. What type of services are you talking about when you talk about this 80% of organizations having unmet needs?
Thank you so much for the question. It's all over the map. That's one of the challenges of this moment. Whatever the kind of health or human service that's being provided, it's hard to meet that demand in the region right now. Just since January, the demand has increased at 72% of our member organizations, whatever the service is, whether it's housing, whether it's food access, whether it's educational programming, whether it's workforce development kind of programming, legal services, certainly services for immigrants and refugees, even things that are a little bit off the map, trying to help people that have a particular kind of chronic ailment, for example. Mm-hmm. Everything is up, and that's because of our community's growth. Even if the percentage of people in need were to get better, which it isn't right mm-hmm. now, the number of people in need is going up, and the nonprofits are trying and not succeeding at meeting every demand.
Yeah, we always talk about how there's, you know, not enough jobs, not enough housing, you know, all of that. But then the more people there are, the more people need help, need things.
That's right.
Yeah.
These are the good problems that we have in this community.
So earlier this year, you moderated a Columbus Metropolitan Club luncheon, and it was about the annual state of nonprofits. And in that forum, you asked community leaders about this topic. So I guess now in this show, we're turning the tables on you.
Yes.
Based on what you're hearing and seeing, what would you say is the state of nonprofits in Central Ohio right now?
it's as challenged as it is across the United States. It's resilient, but it's deeply challenged. This year has felt a lot like COVID year for nonprofit organizations and the people they employ and serve. The challenge beyond that, though, is the cavalry isn't coming. When COVID hit, we knew that vaccines were coming. We knew that federal support was coming. We knew that state support was coming. With this, these are self-inflicted wounds. These are intentional challenges that we've decided to create out of Washington for nonprofits across the United States. And we're certainly feeling that here in Columbus as well, with the scale and the speed of the change and the dollars going away and the policies being turned on their head to make life harder. And nonprofits can't quite keep a pace, even with the unique cross-section of partners that they have in the community to navigate moments like this.
Yeah, something you mentioned is the speed, because the Trump administration has been in office since mid-January. So, it's 8 pushing 9 months. It hasn't even been a year.
Right.
So are we seeing, is it now worries about federal funding, or is it actual loss of money they expected to have coming and it's gone?
It's both. Mm-hmm. It's not just the funding, though. Mm-hmm. So for some clarity, nonprofits receive about 9% of their revenue in federal grants in Franklin County. There's also a significant percentage of state and local grants, and all of that kind of emanates from the same source. Mm-hmm. Then you have things like Medicaid reimbursement, which are an increasing percentage of nonprofit revenue streams. A lot of those things have been challenged or paused in terms of grants from the federal government and then their corollary investments through the state and the local government. And the anticipation of enormous cuts in the future is forthcoming, as you noted to your prior guest. The disruption, though, through executive actions and orders and through agencies shutting down or doing kind of the opposite of what they're supposed to do, all has unique consequences for nonprofits in meeting immediate demands and for planning what they can do in 2026 and beyond, because of the expectation that billions of dollars won't be here just in this community alone, that have long come to this community from presidents of both parties in previous cycles.
You might have heard earlier in the hour, I asked our previous guest if there is too much reliance on federal money from nonprofits. If there's a lot of talk about that they need to be able to find another way without relying on federal money.
Yeah.
What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's a really problematic notion. It's only 9% of a budget. Mm-hmm. But for nonprofits whose margins are very thin, 9% makes a huge difference. But it's not just the percentage that's the challenge. It's the speed at which it's happening. If we were going to change a business model, or if we were going to look at an economic sector and say, we're going to take away 9% of your revenue overnight, over the course of a few months, is this going to be the case with federal grants and nonprofits? That would pose enormous challenges no matter the sector. Mm-hmm. So to do that to nonprofits who can't just increase the price of a widget to make up for it, or go find more money elsewhere from willing donors, they're all being asked the same thing by a lot of organizations within HHS, nonprofits in the arts, and quite frankly, public radio too. We mm-hmm. all are being uniquely challenged by these folks that have no idea what they're doing, but do. Mm-hmm. So there is certainly a history of partnership between government and nonprofits to help people and meet community needs that really began in earnest with the war on poverty and President Johnson. Mm-hmm. And what this administration is trying to do is take us back to the 1950s and prior, when local dollars supported local needs. But things have changed, and you can't immediately take things back to the way they were, just in terms of a business model, just in terms of the systems that are funded through this, whether it's food access, healthcare, education, you name it. All of this is uniquely under duress right now through federal budgets and through executive actions. And they're about to take another swing at housing, which is of enormous importance to mm-hmm. this community and to communities across the country. And that will have significant ripple effects that can't just be made up by looking for other money elsewhere.
Hmm. What would you say if it's said that there's too much reliance on federal money and all of these nonprofits should be going after corporate philanthropic support? They're not even saying find individual givers. They're saying go find a business with a lot of money and make them give it to you.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
Those folks probably haven't done that. Mm-hmm. Corporations give on average 1% of their profits. And the bill that these same folks just passed and signed into law July 4th actually disincentivizes corporate giving. So they're talking out of both sides of their mouth when they make arguments like that. They're quite good at that, if not much else.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the state of nonprofits in Central Ohio with Michael Corey, Executive Director of Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. So your organization, Human Service Chamber, works with and advocates for more than 200 nonprofits. And that's a big number, 200
yes.
nonprofits. I looked through the list of names and, you know, recognized some of the larger groups, the Red Cross, Big Brothers Big Sisters, Habitat for Humanity.
Yes.
How do you keep track of them all? I mean, tell me about how someone becomes a member of the Human Service Chamber.
Sure. Well, in terms of keeping track, it's a real privilege and honor mm-hmm. to be able to serve each and every one of these organizations. We have grown. We had 80 organizations as part of our membership when COVID began, and we're now at 220 plus. We just added a new roster, or a new class, I should say, of nonprofits. We just changed our process this year, actually, under the leadership of our Deputy Director, Bhumika Patel, where agencies fill out a very simple application, and then they have to go through a quick, essentially, review process, and then we onboard them. So we're going to start onboarding a new group of organizations later this month, actually. But mm-hmm. you fill out a quick application on our website, and as long as you're a 501c3 providing or supporting health and human services in Franklin County, you can be a member of the Human Service Chamber.
And so people want to be a member of your group because having a central advocate helps. Is it like you're trying to lift up all the nonprofits?
That's a big part of it, we hope. We were created in 2010 to do that, to provide one voice with and for the health and human services nonprofits of this community. There are not many organizations like ours across the U.S. We're one of four that we're aware of. One is in Cincinnati, one just started in Cleveland, and one is in Austin, Texas. There are statewide nonprofit associations. And your prior guest, their organization, the National Council, serves statewide nonprofit associations. But just like business chambers have local, state, and a national apparatus, we think it makes sense to have that same apparatus for nonprofits too. So advocacy is certainly the foundational piece of what we do, but we also provide a whole array of professional and capacity building services for nonprofits. We distribute free stuff that people donate, lots of time corporations to our nonprofit organizations. We try to drive connectivity amongst the organizations to drive as much collaboration and efficiency as possible. And we try to give them a lot of information. We email our CEOs regularly, several times a week, much to their chagrin, with all sorts of information that we hope is valuable for them to help them be the best decision makers they can be at their respective organizations, whether they're very large or very small or something in between.
Is your organization a nonprofit?
We are.
Okay. So how is funding going for you if Franklin County supports you?
So fortunately, we operate with two primary revenue streams. One are dues. And we're so far so good on that front, but we're anticipating a change next year if a lot of nonprofits have to merge or close. We're bracing for that possibility in 2026. And we received two grants, one from local government and one from an area foundation, to help us do a lot of that professional services and capacity building work. And it's been a little bit tougher this year. We're looking at a deficit at the end of the year unless we make some changes, which we will. To accommodate that, 54% of our members are also anticipating a deficit at year's end, but most of them will make adjustments to avoid that if possible. That's what we'd like to avoid happening at a time when need is going up. This is not a time when we need to be retracting. We need to be leaning more into this, and the funding environment, because of the federal government, is making that harder.
Yeah. You mentioned something that I was going to ask you next, which is about mergers.
Yes.
Have you talked with nonprofits about merging their services or other cost-saving measures
sure.
to try to keep some of the, especially some of these smaller ones, afloat?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. So prior to the pandemic, there was about one nonprofit merger in town a year.
Mm-hmm.
When the pandemic began, because of the creativity of our nonprofit leaders and because of support from the federal and state and local government and philanthropy, et cetera, there were no nonprofit mergers even necessary for a few years. Mm. Last year, there were four.
Okay.
This year, there will be more than that. We're trying to provide support to our members as they think about that. About a quarter of our membership is at least contemplating mergers or affiliations at this point. But we don't think that's going to be the silver bullet in navigating this moment. There are organizations where it's going to be a necessity just because of some unique circumstances. And it can create efficiencies to ensure services continue. That's the focus of our members. It's not necessarily to keep their doors open. They want to make sure people can get the help they need. So where mergers make sense in that regard, a lot of organizations are pursuing that. We've had some presentations to our members about that and what it entails, the potential benefits of it. But it will be one of the arrows in the quiver as nonprofits have to make adjustments in the months ahead.
Can you give me, you said there were four mergers this past year. Can you give me an example of one?
Sure. Legal Aid of Central Ohio now includes Southeast Ohio. Directions for Youth and Families brought in a smaller organization called See Kids Dream. Those are the two that leap to mind right now, but there are two others, I promise.
Yeah.
So it tends to be much larger organizations and smaller organizations finding the right path together. There are a few others that are in process that mirror that makeup, but not everyone will be able to merge. That will not be the way forward either.
Did any nonprofits go out of business within the past year that were members of your group?
I can think last year, no. There was an organization that closed 2 years ago, but I don't believe it was because of financial purposes. I think it was because the leadership of the organization wanted to make a change and no one wanted to carry it forward. That will not remain the case. There will be organizations that do have to close. I don't think that's going to happen immediately, but I think starting in 2026 and 2027, as some of the Medicaid cuts hit, some of the SNAP cuts hit, and it creates adjustments in supply and demand there for nonprofits, that's when we're going to start to really see it. But no, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. When, I mean, we hate to talk about an organization suffering or if one is suffering worse than others and that kind of thing.
Right.
But are there certain organizations that are being hit harder? It's the Medicaid ones are going to have the harder time in the next 2 years?
They will eventually.
Yeah.
So I get asked that question quite a bit right now. The organizations that got hit right away by this administration were the organizations providing refugee resettlement services. Because the administration, just like it had done during its first tenure in the White House, went right after refugee resettlement. So we have three of those organizations in town, Jewish Family Services, CRIS, and ETSS. And they have more challenges because of that unique array of hits and their reliance partnership. I should say partnership, not reliance, with the federal government. Mm-hmm. They've been doing that since President Reagan. But we've decided that's partisan now, apparently. Every other subsector of health and human services will be targeted if they haven't been already. And any attack on one subsector drains resources out of the whole sector. So just because those refugee resettlement agencies were first through the wall, that had an effect on all the other organizations that work and partner with those populations. And that's a lot of organizations. So then as a corollary, all the organizations working with immigrants have had a unique series of challenges right now. There are legal fights happening as we speak where the federal government's trying to place burdens on nonprofit organizations to determine the legal status of those they serve or to risk legal jeopardy. I mean, just astonishing stuff, very anti-democratic stuff that's happening right now. But yes, the immigrant-serving organizations got hit first. The Medicaid cuts are going to be phased in. That wasn't an accident.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk in the news about Medicaid cuts, but what people don't realize is that we're talking like 2028, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's that timeline will hit over the next couple of years. And the good news out of that is it gives us some time to try and brace ourselves for the changes that will come and the surge of demand that will come. The bad news is that they made those historic cuts. There had never been cuts like that in the history of Medicaid, but we decided now was the time to cut $1 trillion out of Medicaid over the next 10 years.
Well, coming up, we're going to continue our conversation about the state of nonprofits here in Central Ohio. That is when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Federal funding cuts and cuts at the state level are putting nonprofits at risk across the nation. The Human Service Chamber of Franklin County helps more than 200 nonprofits in Central Ohio navigate the always changing landscape. And we're talking about the state of nonprofits here in Ohio. Still with us is Michael Corey, Executive Director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. He recently authored an opinion column on the need to support nonprofits. Thanks for being here, Michael.
My pleasure.
So we were just talking during the break about how you have been with the Human Service Chamber for about a little over 8 years. So that means that you started with the first Trump administration. So this is the second Trump administration. So we've been through this before. There have been cuts. He made cuts 8 years ago. And then there was no Trump administration in the middle, but there was also a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So how have you navigated this past 8 years as being someone who's trying to help nonprofits? Because I feel like the cuts happened and then there were changes, but the pandemic was there and now there's cuts again. Like, how do you reconcile that in your brain?
I've gained a lot of weight.
Haven't we all?
it has been the most challenging decade for nonprofits in the history of nonprofits. Mm-hmm. The pandemic year of 2020 and the follow-up to it in 2021 was certainly uniquely challenging for health and human services nonprofits because of the surge of demand, because of the challenges that came with it. But it coincided with this unifying strength and support and the expectation that the community would be there for nonprofits just as nonprofits were there for the community. And that's what has shifted. Mm-hmm. That's what's even different from Donald's first time in office. They couldn't do as much as they wanted to do back then. They weren't trying to do, they weren't trying to dismantle, because they're not doing anything. They're not building anything. Mm. They're destroying. Mm. They're tearing down federal agencies. They're limiting what agencies can do. What's happening at the Department of Health and Human Services alone is straight up negligence. And try doing public health work as a nonprofit organization or a local public health authority or state public health authority when people are getting misinformation right from the HHS secretary, when they're taking away vaccines, when they're ending programs that are critical in keeping people fed and healthy and cared for. It doesn't make any sense, but that is what they're doing. They weren't doing that to this degree or with this speed between 2017 and 2020. Mm. It was a much more balanced attack and slower one. And now it's unhinged. It's just been released, and everyone is trying to navigate it. And I don't care what folks say publicly, there isn't a sector that's looking at what's happening in Washington and going like, oh yeah, I know it's coming next. I can handle this. The amount of uncertainty is destabilizing for everyone. Folks ask us, what can nonprofits prepare for 5 years out, 10 years out? What should they be doing to innovate and prepare for what comes after whatever this moment is as we dismantle federal government's efficacy? And the answer is, if the Federal Reserve can't look a month out and guess what's coming, how are nonprofits supposed to? So all of us together, I think, are going to be galvanized to unify to navigate the uncertainty of what happens when we don't have a serious federal government, which we don't have right now. And to me, that creates really unique opportunities within communities and within states to find new partnerships across sectors and within sectors to get through what we have no choice but to navigate. I can't help but think of the morbid line from Cormac McCarthy, you can't stop what's coming. We can't stop what's coming, but we sure as hell can respond to it. We have no choice. We have to evolve to it. And that is what has been hopeful for me. The amount of corporations, health systems, people in government very quietly trying to figure this out with us because we have no choice. And every city across the United States right now is having to ask these questions because there isn't any way through to continue serving the community unless you do it together.
What are some of these new and innovative ways besides going to a corporation and asking for money and asking for more sponsors and that kind of thing?
It's an excellent question. I think we're still sort of in the infancy of what that's going to look like. I think cities are going to be the laboratories for what this navigation of the moment will look like as the federal government retreats from its obligations. I think it will look a lot like traditional things in the immediate term. It'll be revenue sharing. It'll be resource sharing. It'll be just finding little acts of generosity that can come to help nonprofits stand up their work and support it. And then that will increase to what technological innovations can we share? What capacity building resources can we give to you? Let me give you a very concrete example of something that's happening right now that's really astonishing. Mm-hmm. There's a PR firm in town called Gebbin Communication. And they reached out to us, I think, in March with an idea. They wanted to provide an array of their services to about a dozen nonprofits at no cost to the nonprofit. And we said, that's amazing. We'll have a lot of organizations that want to take advantage of that because, as your prior guest noted, communications is a big part of this work.
Right.
Helping people understand the work and understand the value of it.
They have to know you exist, yeah.
Precisely. So this was great. And we shared with our members, hey, if you want to do this, sign up here. We had 37 agencies respond in like 24 hours. So the CEO of that company, Heather Whaling, was just talking with a friend about it that night. And fortunately, the friend runs a foundation and said, oh, well, we can help double that number of organizations that you serve. So now 37 organizations are getting free support from Gebbin Communication. Things like that are going to continue percolating and becoming embedded in whatever makeshift system we have to help stand up. What we have to do to keep people served, whatever their need is in this community, until cooler, calmer, bipartisan heads prevail, which we don't have right now. But we do have Republicans and Democrats that want to keep nonprofits going in spite of what's happening, and helping them understand the needs and then figuring out what those resources are and then how to get them. That's the question of the moment that our community is navigating through something called the Funding Review Advisory Committee. And this gives our community a leg up over most. In short, this is a convening of mostly business leaders, city officials, and county officials trying to figure out what public revenue streams and other revenue streams can be generated to support health and human services nonprofits, as well as arts nonprofits and our tourism community, Experience Columbus. And just last week, I had the privilege of speaking to them, trying to give them a sense of the state of things, and also trying to identify with them, where can we find resources to help the community have the resources it needs to continue flourishing? And as I've told them, and I'll happily tell you and your listeners, there isn't a community in the country that's figured that out yet. We're all doing it in real time. And to me, what's exciting is that, say, the 100 largest cities in the United States and their corresponding counties can work in concert with one another to figure this out with the specifics they need in their respective states. I think that's an opportunity that we're going to take advantage of, and that where we can lead the way in Columbus and Franklin County for the rest of the country to say, oh, well, that's what they're doing in Columbus. We have to do that, too.
Are you talking like a bond issue or a tax or something like that, where it's an actual set amount of money coming in, so it's something more reliable?
So I am not a public finance expert. That's going to be the committee's job to come up with the ideas for the revenue streams that will work. When they did this before, because they've gone through this process once before, a health and human services levy was considered and shelved. They looked at other options that they've pursued. I'm of the opinion that everything has to be looked at because we're going through something that has never happened before. So I'm very excited to see what ideas come out of the Funding Review Advisory Committee later this year. But whatever they are, I know that they will be able to ideate with cities and counties across the United States, and we're going to figure this out.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the state of nonprofits with Michael Corey, executive director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. when I'm out in the community and I talk about working for public media, and more recently, everyone's asking me about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting being closing. So they've closed because they lost their federal funding. So therefore, we lost our federal funding, et cetera, et cetera. But they ask, they always ask me, if the tides turn, political things change 4 years from now, won't it just come back and everything will be fine?
Yeah.
And I always say that once something is undone, even if politics completely changes, it's hard to start it up again.
Yep.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. That's the dark element of all of this. You can't rebuild after a couple of elections and then have it completed before another election. Mm-hmm. That is sort of what happened after the Trump administration and the Biden administration. The Biden administration had to rebuild a lot of what the Trump administration had torn down. They couldn't build it up fast enough and people weren't satisfied. So they went back to the Trump administration, who's now decided to go from a wrecking ball to dynamite. So it will take a generation at least. And whatever we rebuild, because we will rebuild, will not be the same. And that will have pros and cons. We have to focus on the positive of that. But yes, we are losing a whole lot, including in this, at the start, talent. We're losing a lot of talent. We're losing a lot of expertise and knowledge. We're losing a lot of connectivity and capital. And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't serve anybody. We're not making any of these decisions with thought behind it. We're just doing it. We're just destroying. And it does make me very, very sad that we've decided to walk away from our experiment in democracy in a lot of ways in so doing, because democracy relies upon strong systems outside of government and inside of government. So part of what we have to do is make the case for these systems and their benefits to all of us. But for nonprofits, the Columbus Region is not the thriving place that it is. But for nonprofits, the United States is not what it is. And there are so many other systems outside of nonprofits, as you've noted, that are under unique duress through policy and funding and rhetoric alike. Just the threat of prosecution has a chilling effect right now. It is astonishing. But all of that can be rebuilt, and it will be. But it will not be 4 years. It will not be 8 years. It will be multiple generations requiring both parties to come to the table to do it together, as always happens after extreme partisanship makes enormous changes enormously fast. That's what's happening. I firmly believe we'll get out of this and get on the other side of this. I'm very hopeful about what will come. But in the meantime, we want to minimize the harm. And that's the part that makes me sad, because I know that a lot of people are suffering and will suffer because of the decisions that are being made today that we can't stop today. So we have to play chess while they're playing checkers.
Mm. You wrote this opinion piece for Columbus Monthly saying that there's a need to help support nonprofits, and you were kind of making some of these warnings that you're talking about. You know, individual people who are listening right now have no control over whether you get corporate sponsors or whether whatever this funding review committee ends up doing.
Right.
They can support it after the fact, but they don't have any control over it.
Yes.
What do you wish individual people knew about supporting nonprofits? Because I am on a lot of e-newsletter. I get a lot of emails.
Yes.
There's a lot of different organizations asking for different things at different times. I get a lot of letters in the mail.
Yes.
How do you decide where to help with the little bit of money each person has to give?
Yeah, thank you for that. I would start with every bit of help helps, whatever it is. Every bit of help helps. And just because the enormity of the challenges is unprecedented doesn't mean we can't move the mountain. You move a mountain by starting with a small pebble, as Khalil Gibran said, right? It's trite, but it's true. And I think everyone has to look at their priorities, their availability, their interests, their passions, their convictions, and find the organizations that are consistent with that, and then go do. Go to them and say, what can I do to be of support right now? Whether it's dollars, whether it's donations of time, whether it's donations of resources, whether it's expertise, whether it's advocating with and for them. To me, that is just as valuable as anything else right now. We have in Senator Husted and Senator Moreno, two offices that are doing a very good job of getting out there and listening. We need them to be inundated with people saying, okay, we passed this bill as a country in July. Mm-hmm. We see now, or we have seen, that was an error. We can undo it. You can vote to undo what you've done. They need to hear that this is important, not just to a handful of organizations that, as your prior guest noted, are being pilloried with false rhetoric right now. These are essential cogs in our economy and in our community to make sure people have what they need to be healthy and happy. So we really need people, if nothing else, to be part of that chorus clamoring for our government to do what it has done, no matter the party in power for a long time, and resume that bipartisan support of nonprofits. Because it's not nonprofits per se that are suffering. It's the people that they're serving. It's the constituents of every elected official in Washington and in the State House. That's what everybody can do. They can call, they can email, they can show up, they can send letters. And I know that there's a lot of cynicism about the efficacy of those things, especially now, but it does help.
Our guest today has been Michael Corey, Executive Director of the Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. Thank you for joining us on All Sides.
My pleasure.
And I want to say thank you to our staff, Senior Producer Marcus Charleston, Producer Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, our student producers, Iza Huck, Colin Simpson, and Kiara Burson, video production by the Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. If you missed any part of today's show, listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides, or subscribe to our podcast. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.